Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Talking Critic, where we command an army of mutant produce. I'm your host, NYU's English professor Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of the critic. Who else is here with me today?
Michael Raparez, and I've always relied upon the kindness of strangers.
Who else?
I'm Diana Goodman. My whole body looks like Reagan's neck.
And Henry Gilbert. God bless Uncle Bisquick.
And today's episode is Dukerella.
Ooh, baby's got back.
This episode aired on May 15th, 1995, and as always, Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-world history in movies.
Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book!
Oh boy, Bobby! Alfonso Cuarón makes the underrated kid film A Little Princess. Ooh. Hugh Grant is the Englishman who went up a hill but came down a mountain. And Denzel Washington battles Gene Hackman on a submarine in Crimson Tide, which would later inspire Al Jean and Mike Reiss to make the Simpsons Season 8 episode Simpson Tide.
Oh, was that a, who's the guy who wrote all those books about submarines?
Oh, it's not one of those books.
Really? It's not a Tom Clancy
it
original?
It is not a Tom Clancy. Okay. It was. No. I would bet it was greenlit because of Tom Clancy excitement.
Right. Clive Cussler.
Actually, Crimson Tide is, it at least had one writing pass by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, really? The part where they talk about Silver Surfer might be Quentin Tarantino?
When they compare Jack Kirby and Mobius's versions of Silver Surfer, that might be by Quentin Tarantino.
That's some Quentin Tarantino punch up right there.
I love that part, actually. I also love the part where all these people are professional Navy crewmen on a major submarine, but one guy asks an obvious question so the audience will know how a torpedo is shot.
Right.
And the guy asks, like, how do you do that? And the guy explains and says, how the fuck did you get on this submarine if you don't know that?
Like Princess is damn good, too. Mm-hmm. An Englishman who went up a hill, came down a mountain is top British twee of the 90s.
Ugh, yeah.
It's cute, though. It's just cute. There's a lot. There's a better, you know, Waking Ned Devine's better for cuteness or whatever.
Yeah. Is that the one where he wins a lottery, but the guy's dead and they have to fake it? That's
right. Yeah, the little town fakes that he's still alive. Yeah.
I like A Little Princess as well. It's, I believe J.K. Rowling said that was the film that made her want him to direct The Prisoner of Azkaban.
No way.
Which really launched Cuarón's career, though he's such a slow filmmaker, even though, like, Children of Men is one of my favorite movies ever, ever, ever. I love that movie so much. But actually, all three of the movies this week are pretty good and have held up really well over the last 22 years.
We pull into the station here and we actually get some good movies.
Well, we're getting closer to summer, so we're not as many like trash films in the winter as we normally got.
So it should be noted, this is the last real episode of The Critic. The next one is a clip show with about roughly 3 minutes of new animation, and that will be our final Talking Critic episode, but now we can still celebrate the good times of The Critic with this Duke-focused episode.
So actually, from my research, the clip show was meant to air in early April. But thanks to the Oklahoma City bombing, they're like, let's not air this episode with a bomb in it.
With what happens at the end, there's a status quo change at the end of this episode, which I feel does feel like a season finale
to me. It's a season finale. You end a season with a wedding, a big splashy wedding. That's how you end seasons of shows. But so, yeah, I think this was originally meant to be the season finale and would work much better as a series finale. So I like to pretend the clip show and the things that happened after the clip show didn't happen, and this is the series finale.
Jay died immediately after this episode ended, and the rest is a death dream.
He never left. He never leaves the dungeon. That's
right.
What I think.
That's right. Yeah. The dungeon. Yeah. So this episode begins with a parody of "Look Who's Coming to Dinner," but instead of
guess who's coming to dinner?
Sidney Poitier. Sorry, I am sick. What did I say? Look Who's Coming to Dinner?
Yeah, that's the one with the talking baby arguing with Spencer Tracy.
You don't want babies. You don't want talking babies coming to dinner. But in this parody of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, we have Michael Jackson.
Lisa Marie, honey, who's your new girlfriend?
He's my husband.
Now, honey, you two don't go together. Just like whipped cream and pork chops.
Here's your pork chops and whipped cream, King.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Daddy, you don't like Michael just because his skin's a different color.
No, it isn't.
The critic had very few cheap Michael Jackson jokes, and these were the years to make them. The post, lawsuits and post allegations era.
I give a big thumbs up to the animators getting his dancing done well. He moves well. He looks like the Michael Jackson of that time. Well, actually, he looks like black and white music video Michael Jackson, which was 4 years or 3 years before.
Remember
this.
The times, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And I guess for the kiddos out there who have heard 8 million stories about Michael Jackson, I don't think they understand that in 1995, it was a huge deal that Michael Jackson married the only child of Elvis Presley.
And a woman.
Well, yes, also that. I mean, we kind of wanted to believe he was into women back then, but I guess there were still the questions.
Yeah, I was reading some interviews with Lisa Marie Presley because of this joke, because I just remembered this as being a joke on late night TV. Mm-hmm. And apparently he was struggling with his troubling drug addiction even back then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all those painkillers and shit, man. It's sad.
Just like dad. You always end up marrying someone who reminds you of dad.
That's true.
Yeah. Think about it.
It makes so much sense now. Yeah.
She would go on to marry Nicolas Cage, who played an Elvis impersonator in
Honeymoon in Vegas.
Honeymoon in Vegas, yeah. And I'd say that's almost as crazy as marrying Michael Jackson is marrying Nick Cage.
I think it's different kinds of crazy.
Yeah. One might be more fun than the other one.
Yes.
But the idea of seeing if Elvis Presley somehow lived into the 90s, which never would have happened the way he lived his life, if he had done that, the idea of him meeting Michael Jackson is a funny one.
Yeah, King of Rock and King of Pop, baby.
Exactly, yeah.
Was there ever a fabled meeting between the two? They overlapped in some way, right?
According to Lisa Marie's wiki page, in 1975, Elvis did take her to a show of the Jackson 5, and she was in the audience. It wasn't, I don't know if they met each other in person then, but he did do that. So
that's cool.
There was a tiny amount of crossover with Elvis living, and that's one of those stories too. I remember when Caitlyn Jenner came out, there was a story from her wife of the 70s, and she tells the story of when she first saw Jenner on TV. She was watching the TV with Elvis, who was then her boyfriend.
Whoa.
And it was just such a weird story of like, I thought this was a story of Caitlyn Jenner, and then Elvis enters into the story.
That will overpower most stories. We get the second joke about Jay being an Elvis impersonator, though.
Yeah.
And the joke is they cheer when he leaves the building.
I know.
So he's not very good.
This is more of the cruelty towards Jay that's like season one style. And I gotta say, in general, this episode is like so punchy. It reminds me a lot of the Front or
yeah.
like late mm-hmm. season four episodes of Simpsons when Gene and Reese were like tired and they weren't as focused, I would say.
Well, I think that clip also kind of sets the stage for Jay's character in this episode, and that like you think about it, it's like, wait, why would he just have a humiliating clip of himself to show on on national TV, and then he just kind of grins about it afterward, like, hey.
See that?
I split my pants. Yeah.
But Jay is beating the man with his tongue stuck to an ice cube tray channel, which is a joke about just how many there's so many cable channels, guys.
Yeah.
How could you watch all of them?
Mm. Also, who'd have thought that Henry Kissinger would still be alive, but not Michael Jackson?
He's still hanging in there. If you call that living.
If you call it living, yeah.
Yes. So Alice's sister is coming to town, and she explains her troubled relationship with her sister.
My sister and I have never really gotten along. Randa was better than me at everything. Listen to the mockingbird. Listen to the mockingbird.
If the nightingales could sing like you, they'd sing much sweeter than they do.
Then she had the nerve to upstage me at my wedding. Only the bride is supposed to wear a wedding dress.
Oh, silly me. I'll just take it off.
Mmm.
Oh.
So we do see Cyrus again.
Yeah, it was a nice bit of continuity seeing Cyrus again. I also like to think that stripper music was diegetic, and at her wedding it just started
yes.
playing.
They just immediately knew what song to play.
So that song that she sings is You Brought a New Kind of Love to Me, made famous by Maurice Chevalier in 1930 in the film The Big Pond.
Wow.
And I have a clip of it right here.
If the nightingales could sing like you, they'd sing much sweeter than they do. For you brought a new kind of love to me.
I might have heard that in Bioshock. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. It was also, I wonder if they used it in this because it was a joke in a Marx Brothers film. There's a bit where they steal Maurice Chevalier's identification and try to pretend they're him to get on a boat. And then they're like, you don't look anything like him. He's like, And then Groucho says, oh, yeah, what about this? He starts playing the song and sings that specific part. The Nightingales Could Sing Like You. And they're like, ah, see? So the Frank Sinatra cover is a pretty good one, too. But so that I always wondered if that was a real song or just one that Miranda made up. But I like that they made up for the show. But I guess it fits with this show that it is like very old-timey film.
So Alice's sister finally makes it to New York via bus.
Hello, Alice. I can see New York's done wonders for your appetite.
Jay Sherman, this is my sister, Randa.
Miranda Tompkins, at your service.
Miranda's named after the heroine of The Tempest. I'm named after Alice Cramden on The Honeymooners.
We were both lucky compared to Brother Bisquick. Now, if I can find a porter, sir, pardon me, might I ask?
Hon, if you're going to live here, you're going to have to learn a few new languages. Excuse me, but for another cab, you could wait, maybe?
Here, taken be healthy.
I did not include Alice talking to the cab driver, which might have... It should have just been like her saying unga bunga. It was just like, you're not saying actual words.
Well, especially when she says a street name, that should be in the native language. Yeah. She's naming a street.
But regardless, if she speaks the language, he will find a way to cheat her.
I like that extra addition there, yeah. It's still so distracting whenever you hear John Lovitz do a voice that isn't in Jay on the show, but I feel like he's so... I wonder if Lovitz was just very insistent, like, if it's an Hasidic Jew, I do the voice.
Now, here's a question. Is there just one cab driver in New York, or do they just all look the same?
I think it just is this guy.
It just keeps being, look at sign.
It's like how on 30 Rock, Dr. Spaceman is the only doctor in New York.
Well, if you do remember in season one, we did meet two cabbies who don't look like the guy.
Right.
Like,
I think I'd smell stick.
I think she was deported. You know, marry me and make me a citizen.
I guess they both were. I also do love the guy who works at NYU's.
Yeah.
So Miranda directly quotes Blanche DuBois. That's kind of a running gag in this of just that she is so clearly a Tennessee Williams character that they just say it out loud all the time.
I kind of wish they didn't shout it out where she says, like, you know, could we make this less like Streetcar Named Desire?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that's kind of a Gene and Reese thing. They did that. They've done that multiple times on Critic where the reference is clear enough. You know what the reference is. But then somebody will say aloud, hey, this isn't Citizen Kane or whatever. It's
I gotta play to the cheap seats.
Yeah. And just like how they change Homer into Stanley from the play, they change Jay into Stanley as well when he comes in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I actually really like that because he gets the – they somehow graft on Marlon Brando's sexuality in that role onto Jay while still making Jay, like, gross.
And still making a Brando fat joke.
Yeah.
The Napoleonic code means I get to eat Napoleons.
I gotta say – the Stella is the obvious one, but them pulling out a thing about the Napoleonic Code, that is a deeper cut of lines from Streetcar.
Yeah. It really is. And Jay is a giant growth on his ass, which probably is why he dies after this episode. This couldn't continue.
He needs to deal with that preposterous posterior.
Again, second case of inexplicable behavior. It's like, why is he flirting with Randa in front of Alice?
Yeah, it's so – I think he has a brain tumor in this episode.
That could be.
All over the place.
That would explain so much.
Yeah.
So Randa is here to find a rich husband, and she goes on several dates. I've captured two of them.
Oh, boy.
Now, you must understand, I only want you for your body.
I like a man who likes the way I look.
You don't understand. I need a liver transplant with a kidney chaser. God, I'm funny.
What's wrong, date?
I get the feeling you're not the least bit interested in me.
I think you're the most gorgeous creature alive. Those lips, those eyes, that rugged 5 o'clock shadow. The old mate at the table will pay my check.
Jeremy is looking in a mirror. A rare appearance of Jeremy in season two.
Yeah. Huh? Diana, you watched Star Is Burns with us. They did the same fucking joke of Hannibal showing up at the audition for Burns. It's like, I get it. You think it's funny that randomly Hannibal Lecter will show up on his gurney, but it's like, it's not funny anymore, dudes. Like, please.
Yeah, even back then,
it's been
sort of
4 years.
It's like, this is the one reference we get out of this movie that he's got, you know, the mask on and you wheel him in on a little hand truck.
Yeah.
And because he's going to eat someone's face off.
At least the Simpsons in that Sideshow Bob episode do something different than that, and they have a joke about the eating someone's face. Mm-hmm. At least they have that.
There's also a similar joke to A Star Is Burns in which Doris tells Jay to get a tattoo of his true love. And Homer gets a tattoo of Starland Vocal Band.
Oh, yeah. Now, that was in Round Springfield.
Oh, Round Springfield.
But that
yeah.
was still the critic staff.
Yeah, so. Critic staff. But Doris dated Lon Chaney Sr., not Jr.
I love that.
Who died in 1930. So
I fucking love
that. That's such a great, like, I love that image.
Yeah. I could honestly see myself getting that tattoo.
I love that Doris has kind of become like the female Mr. Burns, and that, like, it's never clear how old she is, but
she could easily be 100. Yeah. She wants to marry a zombie.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the tattoo just looks like him as Phantom of the Opera, sort of. It's not even like actual Lon Chaney.
So also, did Randa go on a date with Arthur or Dudley Moore? Like,
it's never really clear who that character is in real life.
They both had organ issues and needed help.
Yeah,
so, but
and so they go.
By
out
the way, Vlada is impotent.
Oh, like, oh you're right.
His souffle has not risen in years.
But
which
he,
is like,
he is rich though.
Yeah.
But Jay gets Alice a diamond locket. They go for her birthday, and Jay gets Alice a locket with a picture of him as the world's fattest man. So apparently,
I love that.
He got a picture of himself in the future and holding the chicken, eating a chicken.
We'd seen a file photo of him that fat before. So,
oh, you're right. So
he has at one time been that fat as he will be 20 years in the future at the Carnegie Hall show that Marty does. But Carnegie Hall must have been rebuilt at some point in between those two, since it explodes in the next episode.
Yes.
This continuity makes no sense.
So at this dinner, unfortunately, Jay is making himself
the center
of attention.
Jay, I'm lonely. Come talk to me.
Randa, it's Alice's night. Stop making yourself the center of attention!
Me? I ask you lovely people, am I making myself the center of attention?
Do you always have to hog the spotlight? Can't you let Alice, who's sitting here with me, have one night? What kind of a sister are you?
Feels like a parody of John Lovitz almost.
Yeah.
I love the little animation move where he goes, Alice.
Alice.
And that he couldn't find a more flattering picture, too.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great acting by John Lovitz, but again, I stand by that Jay has a lesion on his brain.
There's something going on here.
And then we get the classic joke that will never age of that Bill Clinton is fat and that Hillary is a pushy bitch.
And she's like, secretly running things.
Exactly.
Am I right, everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, of all versions of that, I do kind of like the idea of Hillary being mad at Bill, who is president, hugging the spotlight at the State of the Union.
Yes.
Like, the one time where he has the spotlight and everyone else shut up. She's like, why were you paying more attention? I should have gotten all of the attention. I should be president.
She wears the
pantsuit. That's an idea.
I also like the acting on Bill Clinton sobbing while shoving the burger in his mouth. That was pretty great.
So Randa lasts a total of 30 seconds on the streets of New York. She apparently insulted the cheesecake at Lindy's, which is a real thing. Has anyone actually eaten the cheesecake at Lindy's?
No.
I looked it up. It's still famous.
I don't know that I have. But with the Tennessee Williams references, I like she has a little glass menagerie.
It's just
sitting there. It's not mentioned.
I just caught that in this viewing. It's like, Alice and her just playing with this glass menagerie, which that's a really good one. I like that. It's underrated, that one.
I didn't catch that. Yeah, so the original Lindy's opened in 1921. It's still operating. I think there's two locations in New York, and it was made famous. The cheesecake was immortalized in the musical Guys and Dolls. I think there's a scene about it or they sing about it. I don't know the musical, but I know that's where it became famous.
It's a while since I've seen Guys and Dolls. I don't recall that line. I also do like the animation that when Randa comes back for her acting, she still has the cement boots on, so she's hopping around to Alice's apartment.
Like a chain wrap. She's got like graffiti on her.
I know. Yeah. She was almost
and like a tire murdered. Tread.
And also, it's been firmly established in the critic universe, bears eat film critics. So the three bears that are chasing Jay, I think, does fit. Though, again, this is insane. This episode is so crazy.
Yes. The act break is Jay. The bear is breaking into the apartment trying to eat Jay.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he went down to the Bronx Zoo. We don't know the full backstory, except there was a dispute over porridge.
Yeah.
So Miranda needs to get a job in New York City. She first applies to Lane Riche, and Vlada offers her a quiz, like, who will you seat? And she gets hung up on the question, DeForest Kelly or a mangy yellow dog? They both go on the loading dock.
DeForest Kelly, who, if you don't know, he was Bones on Star Trek.
They're both very gruff, both mangy yellow dogs and DeForest Kelly. But she applies to the New York Post and Mattress in an hour.
Now, if you want to work here at the New York Post, you must know that we insert the following words into every headline. Headless, nude, sewage,
and governor. For instance, subway fares raised becomes headless governor found nude in subway sewage.
What about the fares?
You're fired.
Here at Mattress in an Hour, we deliver mattresses in an hour.
I'll do it. Please. I've got to have this job.
All right. You're hired, sweet cheeks.
Isn't that sexual harassment?
Actually, the New York Supreme Court ruled that it is not. Hey, baby, oh, I got something under my robes for
hey,
you.
Hey, how'd you like to bang my gavel,
you
sweetheart?
You see your learned hands?
That's a smart gag.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's kind of topical now. We're recording this before it might have happened, but isn't there about to be a mass outing of sexual harassers in our government?
That's
the highest levels?
At the time of this recording, the rumor is that CNN is going to break a story about like dozens of congressmen who have sexual harassment claims. I know, yeah. I saw some.
Those hundreds of women must all be lying about everything.
They're all lying, yeah. I saw somebody wonder if, say, it is 10 Democratic congressmen and 10 Republican congressmen. Will the 10 Democrats, will they resign and then the 10 Republicans don't? Like, what will happen in that case?
That's what,
like,
we've been on track for lately, yeah, but hey.
I mean, you could be listening to this at the time of Senator Roy Moore, you know?
Wipe the slate and start over. All-female reboot of everything.
Yeah. I agree.
Or Senator Roy Moore's opponent. You never know.
Yeah, whoever that guy is.
It's Dougie Jones. He's actually Agent Cooper. Yeah.
So after one day on the job, Miranda is exhausted from delivering mattresses just to Madonna's house.
I love that joke.
In a very ADR line, though. I wonder what the original one is.
Yeah, this is one of those rare times where the obvious ADR line is probably better than the one.
And another. Yes.
And another one.
We get a...
Because Madonna likes sex, folks. Uh-huh. She has sex.
That's
like
crazy.
That's
insane.
Trumpet.
Or she's building a really cool fort.
That's true.
I like to think it's both. a sex fort. So up next, we get a great Bill Cosby joke. So kids, in the past,
oh, Christ.
All the Cosby jokes were, wouldn't it be funny if this wholesome figure did a non-wholesome thing?
Yes.
I still think this is funny. Let's hear it. This is Rebel Without a Cosby.
Next up, one of America's favorite comedians stars in a remake of a classic film, Rebel Without a Cosby.
You see, the knife is a good thing for slicing and dicing.
Yeah.
But it's not so good for pointing at me, the car, see? You should get yourself a spoon and fill it with Jell-O pudding.
Comedians sticking themselves in classic films? What's next, Dr. Strange Lovitz? Wait a minute, that's a brilliant idea. Hello, Hollywood. Here's the pitch. Dr. Strange Lovitz. He's a character actor. No, I don't think he died.
That's great. That's really great. So we just did it around Springfield, Henry. Who do you think has the better Cosby impression, Dan Castellaneta or Maurice LaMarche? My opinion is Dan Castellaneta's impression is not as accurate, but it's funnier.
I think it's funnier, and I think he can improvise better within it. So I'm going to go with Dan over Maurice as well.
It's fair enough. Fair enough.
But you guys haven't watched around Springfield recently, but the hipping and the hopping and the bipping and the bopping.
The jazz
is all about. Yeah.
Is that the one where they meet their like eighth grandfather?
Yes, they're all jazz musicians.
They all are. Yeah, it's. But yes, these jokes about Cosby were very different.
Yes, it was all about how he was a pitchman for Jell-O and how he was a very wholesome, sweatery guy. Yes. But Duke walks onto Jay's show for the millionth time in the series. Just to interrupt him and invite him to his costume ball he's having.
I fucking love it because this is how crazy the show has been. That Duke can just walk live onto the air and be like, and here are my mutant vegetable men. And you're like, this is just normal, huh?
Yes, killer carrots and potatoes that play the bagpipes are marching across Jay's set. And they show up at the end, too. They don't forget about this.
It's insane. Though I think they should have done more jokes like that of just to get the show on. There should have been more scenes of Alice or somebody else saying, oh, Jay's show is on. And then they turn it on and then you get a movie clip. Just insert it in there.
Yes, and this is where Randa sees Duke on TV and immediately falls in love with him. So his interrupting the show actually pays off in more than one way.
Yeah, that she is turned on that he controls an army of vegetable men.
I also really enjoy Randa's description of Jay and his unique interpretation of masculinity.
That is great, yes.
Yes, it's a very polite way to say that he's gay.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned to Fox, where we can say boobies.
Wednesday, it's an all-new Night of Laughs.
Hachi Machi!
With the return of Dinosaurs and The Critic.
Isn't that wonderful, Earl?
Well, I don't know how I feel until TV tells me.
You'll feel wonderful with all new episodes of Dinosaurs and The Critic. It's a critical mass of goofball laughs. Wednesday, here on ABC.
So we are at the costume ball that Duke is holding, and Jay and Alice arrive as Homer and Marge. And Jay, like, his bald wig is yellow to match Homer's yellow skin, even though he was yellow in A Star Is Burns.
He's previously been yellow, though. I like the idea Diana floated in Star Is Burns that it is within this universe Jay was cast to be on a Simpsons episode, and that episode that we saw was the created episode of it within that universe.
Yeah. Because The Simpsons is a show in the Critic universe. Mm.
That's why he's dressed as Homer.
Because I was just thinking, like, wait, are they just dressed up as the couple that Jay stayed with while he was...
No, the idea that the Simpsons is fictional, and it was not John Lovitz was not the guest star, but Jay Sherman was the guest star. Mm.
He's that big.
So. Yeah.
And so Randa is dressed up as Scarlett O'Hara, so she's changed from Tennessee Williams to a Gone with the Wind character.
Which we have a couple references to in here.
Oh, yeah.
They, again, like, they have to, like the streetcar stuff, they have to say it out loud, like, you're dressed like Scarlett and Gone with the Wind. Though, when they draw Duke as Rhett Butler, I was like, oh, he's never looked more handsome in the show,
They use the introductory shot for Clark Gable of, like, coming, the camera going down the stairs and him turning around with a big smile.
Yeah, he looks just like Clark Gable in drawing, too. And Franklin is there, and he is the mask.
Hello, son.
Dad, you didn't bring a costume.
Oh, yes, I did. Drinking.
Oh, dear. This is just what he did at Nixon's funeral.
Now, if any joke should have been a cutaway joke, that should have been it.
Yeah.
Him doing the same thing, but great animation on him.
He should literally be dancing on Nixon's grave. But I would like, love to see that.
Even at the time, though, mask references were kind of played out.
They're only eight months old at that point.
How much it was parodied.
I still think Drinkin' is pretty clever,
that's
though.
That's beautiful.
Yes. Although that's the only, like, clever addition to it. For the rest of the time you see him as the mask, it's like, it's just that the mask is here. There's no extra jokes.
But I mean, smoking was like my wife of the 90s.
It really was. But it's appropriate that Eleanor is the evil queen because in one of the episodes she had a poison apple. I believe it was a battle of her mother, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't work the same as, it was in Little Devil Do You.
Right. One of the episodes where she's a total bitch.
Apple. Yeah, I don't like that in season two, Eleanor mainly just became the doting wife on Franklin. Like, most of her lines are just saying, ew, Franklin did a worse thing somewhere else.
They really doubled down on Franklin.
She didn't get to have as much fun. You know, it's so weird that I didn't, you know, I was too old for it at the time, but that there was a mask animated show. And this is this is better animated than the mask cartoon. Yes.
It's so much better animated than that cartoon, which wasn't terrible, but still they couldn't do this level of animation.
Yeah, I mean, and that seems like a gimme, obviously, because the mask is based on Tex Avery animation, so let's do it cheap and we'll animate it. And boy, it looked bad.
But Jay unwittingly wins the costume contest.
Hello, Duke.
What are you dressed as? The bald gay man?
Yes, that's it. The bald gay man.
Attention, everybody. We have a winner for the best costume. Jay Sherman as the bald gay man. All the rest of you bald gay men can go home.
Look at the way he's dressed.
Lord, I never win.
Here's the problem. Those bald gay men are not dressed up in any costume. They're just there as themselves. Of course they're not going to win.
I never win anything.
It's also just weird that Duke would go, all you gay people leave. Get out of here.
And the women and the Irish.
I wonder where Alice found that Hitler mask among Duke's property.
Randa is hiding in the bathroom. She got her first crow's foot on her face, and she can't bear to leave. So Alice finds her a mask. At first, it's a Hitler mask. Then it's just a nice, like, masquerade mask.
Gene and Reese cannot resist a Hitler joke. They got to get one in most episodes. And yeah, then Duke is a real fast worker getting Miranda up on the roof almost immediately. Yeah.
Yes.
I think, I don't know if we want to talk about line of the show, but I think my line of the show at least is the reading of him, of Miranda saying like, oh, it's so crowded here on this dance floor. And Duke's just immediately like, want me to have them all killed?
Hey, let's hear it.
Miss Scarlet, may I have the honor of this dance?
Gracious, how crowded it is.
Want me to have them all killed for you? I can do it.
Sweet, but not just now.
We can be alone out on the roof.
But Red, honey, what will people say?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a crap. Your gown's beautiful. I bet you made out of window curtains just like in Gone with the Wind, huh?
Why, how did you know?
You still got the Venetian blinds here in the back.
You really want to see something? Pull the cord.
Ooh, baby's got back.
Love hearing Charles Napier say baby's got back.
All right, so question. Which is a better Gone with the Wind making a dress out of curtains gag? Venetian blinds and back, or curtain rod through the shoulders from Carol Burnett?
Ooh, that was pretty funny.
Because one day I will have the money and the time, and I will make that Carol Burnett dress for Halloween.
I think I prefer the Venetian's blind. The Venetian blinds in the back—it's a dirtier joke.
Yeah, yeah. That she exposed her butt to him immediately. I kind of love that. Yeah, though. Let's play the line of the show jingle for that.
Let's do it. Duke will have everyone at the party killed with the drop of a hat. He doesn't care.
He's excited for it. He really wants to.
It's also funny that they loved putting weird words in the mouth of Charles Napier, and that includes Sir Mix-a-Lot lines, so mm-hmm. Baby's Got Back.
Yes. So just like in Cinderella, this episode is called Dukerella, if you've forgotten.
That's right.
Miranda, they all have to take off their masks at midnight, and she won't because of her wrinkles. So she leaves, leaving
big
a glass slipper behind.
Foot.
Yes, exactly. Duke obviously has a problem with that, so she flees, leaving her glass slipper behind, and Duke must find the woman who fits the slipper.
But Miranda demands that they not identify her, and so I do like the bit, again, more ridiculousness, but it's funny, is the Jay remembering his wigs when he wore the wig.
The judge's wig?
First, the judge's wig, and then when he tears off the wig, again, like – Duke live on TV appeared like, that wig sucks, and rips his wig off. And then he becomes Little Orphan Annie for no reason.
With the eyes and everything.
Yeah.
His eyes are grotesque.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're going bald, covering it with a wig is one thing. But if there's one thing I've learned from RuPaul's Drag Race, you don't take off your wig unless under it you have another wig.
Or if you're having a fight.
Not even then? No.
It could be used as a weapon. You could bludgeon someone with a wig.
That actually has happened, moments of like, I'm going to take my wig off and under it is another better wig.
I'm not versed in these wig battles, so
it's serious business,
I trust you.
Man. Serious.
So we get our second and last film parody of this episode, Field of Dreams 2.
If you build it, they will come.
Wow, Babe Ruth.
Hey, where can a fella get a hooker around here?
Ty Cobb.
Where's the nearest Klan meeting?
Wow, Billy Martin, you're my idol.
Folks, I'm going to marry the woman who fits this slipper. Please, Scarlet, come back to me, honey. I need you. I need you.
Viewer disclaimer, Duke Phillips is not himself. He has been mixing NyQuil and DayQuil.
It's always a mistake. Don't do that, and don't mix it with alcohol at the same time.
Oh, God.
So I kind of wish that Field of Dreams scene went on even longer. I love the idea of, like, if you actually met your heroes, it's bad. Yeah. And especially old baseball players are monsters.
He'll punch you and then spit on you.
Yes.
Yeah. That's, in case you don't know, Ty Cobb was a major league racist
asshole. He wore sharpened cleats on his shoes so that when he slid into plate, he could, like, sever people's Achilles tendons.
Yep. He's in hell now.
And, and Billy Martin was a famous player and successful major league manager, including of the Yankees, and also a mega drunk, like a surly drunk. Though Billy Martin, his drunkenness, I only know about it from wrestling biographies, because he participated in the first WrestleMania, and the story of how they negotiated it was they met with him at a bar and got Gene Okerlund met with him at a bar, got very drunk, and eventually he agreed to it.
What did he do at the first WrestleMania?
He just was like the timekeeper.
Okay.
They just to make it a big deal, they wanted like the main event has special referee Muhammad Ali. Liberace came out with the Rockettes and danced, and Billy Martin is the timekeeper were in New York City.
Spectacle.
They wanted it to be a total spectacle. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the slipper fits on Doris, and Soft Copy calls her the last surviving Bronte sister.
That's pretty great. Yeah.
I also like the very corny joke. I'm from Alabama. Mobile? Just barely. So Alice wants Jay to visit Duke's house, and Jay recalls his last visit.
Jay, you've got to talk to Duke.
No, Randa made me promise I wouldn't.
Doris isn't the one he loves. Just go to his house. You'll think of something.
I don't know. You know, I've only been to Duke's house once, and it wasn't pleasant.
All right, Sherman. You've been here long enough. I'll give you the dental plan you want with a $50 deductible.
$25 deductible.
See you in 5 years.
I wonder how long Jay was actually in that dungeon of Duke's.
Dental plan.
Yes. another Al Jean and Mike Reese staple, the fight over a dental plan.
It's very important to them. But I also just love the Wizard of Oz Duke. It's beautiful, that look.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's hear it, Jay. So Jay eventually visits Duke's house.
I am the great and powerful Duke.
Hello?
Jay, it's not about that dental plan, is it?
No, no, no. I want to talk to you about Doris.
Come with me.
Duke, the woman you met that night wasn't Doris. It was...
Fiddledy-dee. I didn't know we had company.
Doris, you're not from the South.
I told you, I'm from Alabama.
Tuscaloosa?
No, I use denture grip.
Another one of those vaudeville jokes.
A bit of a loose one there.
Yes.
I love it because it's so bad. I love how corny it is.
Mm. I love how fast Duke has no problem. Like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll just come out from behind the curtain then. Just, yeah. So I just do this for funsies, I guess.
It's so bizarre that Duke ignores the rest of Doris's body and just concentrates on the foot.
Fit the foot, end.
He says her entire body looks like Ronald Reagan's neck.
Yes. which I think it means he had sex with her, too.
Yeah.
He's seen more of it, I guess.
Although she has sent him many nude pictures.
Yes.
That is true.
Every 30 seconds, she has a hot, steamy fantasy about Duke. So it's all finally happening for Doris.
Just the whole Cinderella things, like you realize that plenty of women have the same sized foot, like really. I mean, that's why we don't have custom shoes like they did back in the day. There's a big rack of size 8s, and me and 100 other women in this zip code alone, probably 1,000 women in this zip code, we all wear the same.
It's also it's kind of a hat on a hat on a hat of like, so you have Blanche DuBois dressed as Scarlet. And then she's Cinderella. It's like you can lose one of those references. You don't need all of them.
Duke doesn't recognize Doris's voice or the height difference or anything whatsoever. Foot's the same, I guess.
I guess I'll marry this woman.
Marry the last remaining Bronte sister.
And so here's another bit of like, it's so ridiculous that I think it becomes funny again. But like I think Jay should have just jumped on Duke's mattress and broke it that way. Him so directly tearing it apart.
Is he eating the mattress?
And also pulling out pulling out Duke's bedroom chainsaw to tear
it up. But he keeps for reason.
I would have preferred just a simple Jay Fat joke that him jumping on the mattress would break it immediately.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and like, yeah, Duke's reaction, I think most people would just be like, get the fuck out of my house.
Yes.
I mean, his reaction is like, now I need a new mattress and bedtime's in an hour.
With a mansion that big, you would imagine he has several bedrooms, though.
Yeah.
It's like, and that bedroom is small for the pure opulence of Duke's mansion.
And that he would use mattress in an hour out of all possible mattress places. Yes. Like, he could pay anyone to, like, airlift a mattress to him from like Philadelphia or whatever.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's where the finest mattresses are from.
Yes.
And they're still delivering mattresses that late at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a 24-hour gig. You need it in the hour. What if it's almost bedtime?
I'm hoping Rand is at least getting paid well. She's solo delivering mattresses too.
Yes. So of course, Randa shows up. She's probably the only employee of Mattress in an Hour. And of course, Duke immediately falls in love with her all over again and they get married.
Jay, Alice, I want to thank you for everything you've done.
Me too, son. Anything I can do for you, you just name it.
How about a dental plan?
Fat chance. Guards!
Ah!
love all those pictures.
The hand opens a Victoria's Secret catalog. Yeah, we really sped through this episode, but it's funny if a little fluffy, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I like that wedding. The wedding comes out of nowhere and is a major status change for Duke. Like, I wonder if in season three, if they would have pretended it didn't happen or just...
It could have just, like, casually mentioned a divorce. And,
yeah, he'd be like, it's my fourth divorce or whatever.
This show would write off an entire marriage like this in an episode.
Pretty easily, yeah. Though then again, we talked to Reed Harrison, who was a writer for the Phantom Third season of The Critic, and the episode he was writing was Alice Goes Back Home to Tennessee, which, I don't know, maybe Miranda would be in that episode.
Yeah, like, it seems kind of likely.
And Miranda, well, this was a mystery I don't know if you got to the bottom of, Bob, but Miranda, I don't think, was being played by a celebrity they couldn't easily get back.
No, like, in fact, so there's no special guest on this episode, and there's no other person listed in the credits that's not in the regular cast, and I tweeted at Algene and Mike Reese, but because they're in their 60s, they're not always on Twitter answering fan questions. But upon listening to all these clips again and capturing them, it might be Judith Ivey, who plays Jay's mom, doing the voice of Miranda.
Oh.
Maybe they thought, if Miranda's going to be a regular character, let's have one of our cast members play her. And I'm almost positive it is her.
I could see her voice sometimes when Eleanor does, like, happy noises. I can see that those sound a bit like like Miranda's youthful voice, too. Hmm. I could see that.
Prove me wrong, audience. it can't be anyone else unless somebody was doing it under the table. But why would they – why this voice of all voices?
Of all voices to do.
Everyone's been credited.
Yeah, I've
– It was actually Michael Jackson.
that's how they were able to make fun of him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think I also did like at this that the mutant vegetable men came back. And we didn't even talk about that Jay eats a potato man. Like, he kills him.
A man-sized potato man. And his bagpipes, presumably.
And he's dragged away at the end by vegetable people, right?
It's just like two big –
Oh,
just,
oh no. It's more like guys. Alice the Goon type goons who take him away.
But
we do see a photograph of the plant man hanging out with Doris. Like, she's hanging out with more vegetable people.
But the potato played their wedding, right?
Mm-hmm. The potato played the bagpipes.
And runs away from Jay.
So he doesn't get to eat a second potato man. Again, just that is what a food monster Jay has become by this point. And Jay gets locked up in the dungeon again happily. And nobody seems to care that Jay has been locked in a dungeon.
They would solve all of this in the opening of season three, which we never saw.
I think if you pretend this is a season finale, then it is a rather eventful and good season finale that is insane. And but it is a bunch of crazy people, or it's a bunch of tired people at the end of a season, probably also unhappy because they've been hearing from a Fox executive all season that this show sucks and he won't renew it.
Yeah.
So maybe they're just not feeling that great.
I mean, I think it plays pretty fast and loose with the characters, especially Jay, but you can step back and forgive it because it is pretty entertaining overall.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that in that Tennessee episode that not only would Miranda come back, but we also get to meet Uncle Bisquick.
Yes. Yeah.
I would hope he's a very erudite young man. Maybe, honestly, he should be a Tennessee Williams guy type character.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah, that would be great.
Well, no, it'll never happen. It will happen only in your fanfic, people.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, three-piece suit, cigarette holder.
Very fey.
Very fey. Perhaps there was an incident at college that we don't speak about.
Basically, that guy, the Bill Dotrieve's cousin from that episode.
Jobert.
It's Jobert, yes. Yeah. How long have you been sitting there? All my life.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been Talking Critic, and I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. It's a classic gaming podcast every Monday and occasionally a bonus episode on Friday at Retronauts.com. Or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine. If you have played one video game in your life, you might find something you like in our podcast because we've been doing it for 11 years. So I implore you, please, listen to Retronauts. I think it's good. Everybody else, let me know what you do.
I host a weekly video game podcast called Vigigame Apocalypse that you can find at vigigameapocalypse.com. It goes up every Friday. You can also follow me on Twitter at Wikiparaz. That's WikiParaz.
I'm also on a podcast because we're like the podcast Avengers here. Like, we're all uniting from our separate franchises. And my franchise is called 30-20-10, where we look back at this particular week 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. So heading into 1988. 98, and 2008. It's been a lot of fun. We have rediscovered some very strange things.
You're finally going to get to Rain Man, and we can explain why all of these jokes have been made about it, right? Is that 88?
88. You want to hear the craziest shit in the world? Rain Man was the highest grossing film of 1988.
I believe it. I believe it.
Bigger than Die Hard.
That's why they were making jokes about it 8 years later.
It's so weird. Wow. Why?
Well, 87, it was Three Men and a Baby, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but that's got family appeal and repeat value.
But, I mean, Dustin Hoffman is so touchy.
Gutenberg.
Yeah. Henry.
And, yeah. Oh, and also I'm talking movies and stuff on Twitter at Le Cine Nerd.
And I'm Henry Gilbert, and you can follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG. And I thank y'all for your support, your continued support on Patreon. We got some cool stuff coming up.
But, oh, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I guess by the time you're listening to this, we have released our interview with Mike Scully.
Woo!
We got to interview Mike Scully, the executive producer of The Simpsons season 9, 10, 11, and 12, and also a writer from seasons 5, 6, 7, and 8. And he tells us a ton of really cool stuff. I wish we'd gotten even more than an hour with him. Like, he was such a friendly guy.
He's the nicest guy ever, I think.
I love chatting with Mike Scully, and I think you'll love our chat with it too. So if you haven't listened to it yet, patrons, check it out, brother.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week with I Can't Believe It's a Clip Show and the Vile, Vile Webisodes. We'll see you then.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
But I have nowhere to go.